Beyond the Black Box, stories about how crash investigations have made aircraft safer. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is George Bible, who is the author of Beyond the Black Box, The Forensics of Airplane Crashes. The book is out in hardcover from Johns Hopkins University Press. You can find it at Amazon.com. George is a professor of mechanical engineering at the School of Engineering and Mines at the University of South Dakota, also a former NASA summer faculty fellow. And George, it says here you recently completed the Airline Pilots Association Advanced Accident Investigation course. I had a question pop up immediately when I saw that. I was unaware that the Airline Pilots Association would even be in that business. Is this a course a lot of people go through?
All the participants in an airplane crash have representatives, including the air pilots. So this is for the air pilots union training their own people internally so they know how to behave. And coincidentally, it happened to be held at the University of North Dakota. That's why I was able to attend.
Okay. Let me ask you about the book itself. Did you have any particular reader in mind when you set out to write it? Was it designed to be a textbook, or was it designed to give passengers a better background, or what was your vision for the book?
Well, I think I was trying to write a storybook that teaches a little science, or a science book that tells interesting stories. It's one of my pet peeves that science books and textbooks are kind of boring. They don't connect to real life things.
All right, let's dive into some of the case examples you bring up in the book. First, let's talk about the significance of the 1931 crash that involved the famed football coach Newt Rockne. And tell us why this crash had such a lasting effect on the science of forensics as it involves airline crashes.
Well, they had just passed the Air Commerce Act in Congress in 1926, and that's the first time they began certifying pilots and planes. And that was done within the Department of Commerce, and they kind of had a dual job there to promote airline traffic as well as to regulate it. And the FAA still wears his dual hat today, and back then they really had little tradition of regulation. And the whole investigation process was kind of sketchy. For example, they'd have voluntary testimony in secret. They were afraid if the pilots were forced to testify against their employees, they just wouldn't get the truth out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they did investigations, but just barely. They were in secret. They weren't released to the public. And there's such a public outcry with Newt Rockne being such a big public figure. People demanded to know what happened, what was the results, and kind of set the precedent for public release of investigations.
Well, and this seems to be an issue that that continues to some extent to this day. I know that a few years ago, Congress removed the mandate to promote aviation from the FAA's mission, but obviously the same people are still there and the same ways of doing things persist. And I think the recent safety inspection scandals that involved a couple of airlines have brought to mind that, you know, maybe these two roles are closer than we should be comfortable with. But we still have kind of an understanding in this country that when an airliner crashes, we don't approach it from a criminal standpoint first, because that pretty much will mask any chance of getting at the real facts. And some countries, most notably recently Brazil, seem to not share that philosophy with us.
The FBI does lurk in the background. They'll show up if they feel like it, and they'll take over if there's any hint of criminal activity, such as bomb residue. But yes, you're absolutely correct. It's not a criminal investigation. It's conducted by the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board.
You know, I have to wonder, when we read the statistics about transportation safety, it becomes obvious very quickly that travel by airline is so much safer in terms of passenger miles than any other form of transportation. And yet it seems there is a much more aggressive investigation of airline accidents than there are accidents and other forms of transportation. Is that a misunderstanding on my part that's maybe fed by what we see in the media, or is that really true? And if it is, why do we investigate airline accidents so much more carefully?
Well, I think I'd agree with you. It is investigated more carefully. First of all, the National Transportation Safety board is in charge of investigating all the accidents. That includes, well, the recent bridge that fell down in Minneapolis and train wrecks, shipping issues, pipeline failures, explosions, things like that. But I think planes are investigated more completely because it's more complicated equipment. It's a thinner margin of error, thinner safety margins. Any little thing is more likely to be a matter of life and death. You take a railroad or a bridge, these are big, heavy, massive structures which with much bigger safety margins. And obviously, bridges are not supposed to fall down, but planes don't have that kind of safety factor because they have to be light enough to get off the ground. So everything's designed closer to the wire, and there's just less room for error. Train wrecks, for example, it's surprising how often train derails, but unless it killed someone or it's a toxic release, they may not even investigate it, where every little thing is investigated extensively with airplanes, without a doubt.
Do you think there's kind of an emotional overreaction by the general public when they think about the safety issues involved in an airline crash, just because they think that because they're traveling in three dimensions, they feel, or maybe they feel there's a more of a lack of control that when they're behind the wheel of their own car? Are there emotional issues that tend to override the logical issues for how we prioritize these things?
Sure, I think so. I'm an engineer, of course, not a psychologist, but yeah, people are afraid of what they don't understand. Gosh, you look at a 747, it just doesn't make any sense. The thing can get off the ground. And yes, it's an issue of giving up control. I wish I was as safe as driver as these pilots are. There's no way I am, but yeah, you feel like you're in control when you got the wheel on when you're in your hand.
My guest is George Bible, who is the author of Beyond the Black Box, The Forensics of Airplane Crashes. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with George Bible, author of Beyond the Black Box, The Forensics of Airplane Crashes. George, when I read your book, I happened to be traveling on an airliner at the time, and your stories and analysis made me feel safer. Did you feel safer after doing the research to write this book, and have you heard from any other readers on that question?
Well, I've had a number of people say that. Now, you know, I've been talking to friends and people for a number of years, the time I've been working on the book, and I kind of engage people's reactions. A lot of people are afraid of the subject, don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but if they have some interest whatsoever and they're a little more technically inclined, they tend to be absolutely fascinated by the subject. So there's this great yin and yang response. But yes, I wrote extensively of all the safety improvements, so I felt safer after studying crash reports for 3 or 4 years. They leave no stone unturned, and they investigate the heck out of everything, as they should.
You know, before I ever started flying, partly because, frankly, some of my family members were very concerned about my getting involved in general aviation and flying small planes, I probably spent the better part of a year just studying accident reports. I would look at the new ones that came in each day, and some of my friends thought that was a little morbid, but I just had to try to understand what causes accidents in a general sense. And what very quickly became obvious to me is that crashes, even in general aviation, are rarely due in the purest sense to mechanical malfunctions. They're almost always the result of some human error, even when there is a mechanical malfunction. And when we read the NTSB reports on accidents, we see an overwhelming majority of general aviation accidents are caused by human factors, pilot error. And yet, the NTSB seems in its investigations to focus almost exclusively on mechanical things. Is there any kind of process we could pursue to reduce human error in the same way we have improved the hardware over the decades that we've been flying airplanes?
Well, human error is a big issue, even on the big planes. I emphasized mechanical failure because I'm an engineer and I kind of wanted to write a science book. But I think human error is a far bigger problem in general aviation because, well, and with the big planes, you got two of everything, including at least two pilots, two engines. And the level of experience I found was absolutely startling. I had a friend, his son bought a $400,000 Cirrus, and he came from California to Minnesota to buy it and get trained a bit. And at the airport, he met a local flight instructor, and he hired a so-called experienced pilot. The new owner had about 150 hours, the flight instructor at about 250 hours, and the experienced guy was 350 hours. And these big plane accidents I focused on, I'd say everyone had a minimum of 5,000 to 7,000 hours, typically 8, 9, 10,000. It's just remarkable, that difference.
Well, are you suggesting then that we should extend the training process or require people to have more flight hours before they engage in certain kinds of activity, or what would that process be to reduce human error?
Well, probably, but I'm not sure I'm an expert on small plane human error. There's other things. For example, it's virtually impossible for a big plane to get lost in a thunderstorm because of their level of experience, as well as you know, they got the whole, all the air traffic control following them and tracking them and backing them up. And you just don't have that level of support and experience. And small planes get lost in thunderstorms all the time. It's just two different systems entirely.
All right. Well, we have been studying airline accidents now. If we go back to 1931 with Newt Rockne's crash, that works out to just over three quarters of a century that we have been studying the forensics of crashes involving aircraft that are made out of, well, first wood and fabric, and then steel tube and fabric, and then moving on to aluminum construction and monocoque and various improvements. But we've got an awful lot of acquired knowledge about that, those kinds of construction. All of a sudden, as materials science makes huge leaps, suddenly composites are about to be used to build airliner fuselages. Are we going to have to spend decades to make them as safe as aluminum airplanes are, or is the science of forensics in airline crashes advanced enough that we'll learn these things quickly?
Well, it is a concern, but and they just did have a, right after 9/11, an Airbus had a composite tail fall off shortly after taking off from New York City. But you got to realize they've been building composite military planes for quite a while, so they have quite a bit of experience that way. And I think that did hold them back, the safety concerns. And the other thing, you know, every time Boeing does this, they literally bet the farm. People thought somehow composites were not safe. It would probably put them out of business rather quickly, and they definitely take those considerations very seriously. And, you know, they spend billions on design and development on a new plane like this.
Tomorrow, in part two of our conversation, we'll talk about the idea that one area of an airliner may be safer in a crash than others, and discuss George's research as it relates to the recent FAA inspection scandals in general, and Southwest Airlines in particular.
George Bible is a professor of mechanical engineering at the School of Engineering and Mines, University of North Dakota. His book is titled Beyond the Black Box, The Forensics of Airplane Crashes. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.